Hello and welcome once again to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with my buddy, Martin, real estate mogul, wannabe Willis.
That's it. Wannabe. You got that part. Why don't you just do the whole thing with just wannabe?
A wannabe, because you want to be so much?
No, just I'm not... No, I'm not a real estate mogul at all. I don't want people to get the impression. No.
But you're trying. Well, you've got this real estate thing. And usually, you know, a lot. I come up with your names because of the conversations we have before we go on air. And I probably shouldn't tell you that, because now you're going to think I don't want to have any more conversations before we go on air. I just think it's fun. It's fun that you got this great property that you've worked on for a while, and that you're going to try to sell it, and possibly, I don't know. But what's cool about it is just, well, is this a property you were working on when you fell off the ladder and almost killed yourself?
That is the property. Mm-hmm. In question.
And you call it a mansion, and you, like, do you Airbnb it, or is it kind of just a vacation rental?
No, that's a... So the main residence, I did move in there last summer. Mm-hmm. And so it's quite nice, but it needs work. It needs a lot of work. So the guest house is still like 2,500 square feet for, mm-hmm. It's a Victorian home. It's been a real project, and I would never, ever do it again. I will tell you that.
Really?
Darn near killed me a few times.
Yeah. I don't blame you. That's hard work.
Yeah. So I'm lucky I can do some, you know, a lot of the work, but it's just, you know, I've had it, actually.
You've had enough.
Yeah, enough is enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ready to move on.
Yeah. See, this is nice because people get to know a little bit about you, every time we do the show.
The crazy stuff, too?
There is crazy stuff?
Oh, no, I didn't... No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Gonna have to do some digging to figure out what this crazy stuff is. Sounds interesting.
Well, I do a show on UFOs. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. So speaking of, crazy stuff, we got some crazy stuff to go over because it's UFOs. However, right. I guess I should tell you who my guest is. My guest, this is very exciting. I this was really fun. Her name is Caroline Corey. And she's done a documentary called Gods Among Us. And in this documentary, it's essentially about abduction. And she is an experiencer herself. But what she's done here, she's gotten like a dozen different scientists, many of them working in like quantum physics or theoretical physics and astrophysics and DNA and stuff like this, to discuss the possibilities of, extra-dimensional travel, faster-than-light travel, DNA and the manipulation of DNA, and telepathy, all of these sort of phenomena that are related to abduction, or what people report when they say they feel they've experienced something with an extraterrestrial. And what's really fascinating is, of course, there's a lot of speculation in these areas, but these are actual scientists talking about the possibilities. And I find this super exciting. I brought this up. We'll talk about the different scientists in the documentary, but I brought up Dr. Claude Swanson, who's a theoretical physicist that I know pretty well, who spoke at the conference, the UFO Congress, a couple years ago, And I've seen him speak on these topics over the years. But he's along these same lines. And what's exciting about it is he talks about all the experiments that have gone on in subtle energies and things like this. And he talks about, you know, what quantum science is and quantum physics is, because a lot of people throw that term around willy-nilly, you know, without mm-hmm. really knowing what it is. And how, you know, there are certain subtle energies that could allow for a lot of these different phenomena. And so I find it fascinating. So it's a wonderful discussion. Lee Spiegel actually has watched the documentary and he loved it. He thought it was great. So
wow.
He was really excited for me to talk with Caroline, who had actually contacted me before, and she wanted to be part of the UFO Congress Film Festival too. So this documentary people will be able to see at the UFO Congress next year. So really cool. This is a great interview.
Awesome. I see that she actually was able to raise $60,000 through Kickstarter in 30 days, which is really quite remarkable, because I know a lot of people have tried to raise money for films and have not succeeded at all. So good for her.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
That is a great point. I'm really glad you brought that up, because I forgot to ask her about that. But the Kickstarter, that I agree with you 100%. It is, you know, it seems like it's easy. It's really hard to raise money on Kickstarter. So for her to be able to do that is a great success for her. So, yeah, very cool. So this is going to be a fun interview.
Great.
Yep. But before that, let's talk about some UFO news. There's some exciting stuff out there, really, that at least I feel is kind of exciting. But why don't you go ahead? What you got for us, buddy?
Well, since we were talking earlier about this very area before we went on air, so a California UFO witness described 6 hovering triangles. So this was in Escondido, which is not too far away from San Diego. Beautiful area. A friend of mine's mother grew up there, so I had been there a number of times. So there was groups of 6 multicolored lights, and what's really strange about this is that these were vertical. So they were standing on end, basically, instead of, you know, like at a horizontal plane. And so this was on April 15th, tax day, at 8:40 p.m. So in California, it's pretty light still, probably. Let's see, back in April. So there, you know, the pictures show, you know, a daytime sky. But so I'd say this was still had some daylight, but, you know, more like twilight, I would think, at that point. And so at first, the witness saw one single triangle and was estimating that it was about 500 feet above treetops, but about a mile and a half or a mile away. Now, I would have no idea how someone could estimate a level at that far away.
Mm-hmm.
Then they saw that there were 5 smaller triangle arrangements, same thing, on end, toward the west, just above the treetops. Again, they may not have been smaller. They may have been just further away. It's hard to tell. And for them to line up at an angle to show a perfect triangle is it's all kind of weird, but an interesting sighting.
Yes, very interesting. Yeah, very weird, too. And they provided some photos where they kind of drew in where the triangles were and what they looked like to the witness. And,
right.
You know, if this indeed happened, it must have been quite a crazy sighting.
Yeah, and something that would be really hard to explain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can't see any way drones would be doing something like this, especially on the vertical line.
Mm-hmm.
Or a balloon formation. Nothing seems like it makes any sense. It's really an odd one.
Yeah, it's a pretty weird one. Plus, the pictures show San Diego, and I always get excited to see the beach, especially because I'm going to be going to the beach in a couple weeks.
All right.
I'm going to be going on my yearly cruise. You know, everybody knows. Well, I don't know if they know. They probably don't like it because then I don't do a show that week, and that's why it's relevant, because in a couple weeks I won't have a show. But I will have one next week, people, and so don't worry about that. But it'll be a day late because of Memorial Day, so I'll post it on Tuesday. Yeah, really weird, interesting sighting.
Now, wait a minute. Isn't next weekend Memorial Day? Am I getting that wrong?
Yeah, next weekend.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So a week from today, like I'm going to be posting a show today, and then a week from today, I'm going to be taking it off to recognize, to observe the Memorial Day. And so I won't be posting my show until the day after that. And it's going to be Nick Redfern again.
All right.
However, he's got yet another book. That I just interviewed him a couple months ago, but that's because he had a new book that came out. But he's got another book that just came out about Roswell. So the timing will be
that's
good
great.
Because I'll be chilling with him at Roswell, even though he's speaking for a different venue. In about a little more than a month, we'll be out there. So,
man, that guy puts out some books, doesn't he?
No kidding. Holy cow. So a couple other cool stories out there. This one we just posted today, and, well, this is interesting, and the UK tabloids have picked it up because of Nick Pope, that son of – I love Nick Pope, of course, but unfortunately, he likes working with those UK tabloids who, of course, are the bane of our existence because they're just putting out so much crappy UFO stuff. But we got to the source. So one of our contributors is Andres Mueller, and he's in Germany, and he essentially has a website for Frontier Science and the Paranormal in Germany, a very popular site. That he calls it GRIWI, kind of short for the URL that they have there. But he contributes, and he lets us repost his stories, UFO stories, and he did something cool. He got a hold of the MOD because those damn files. So there's 18 files, UFO files, that the UK is supposed to be coming out with. In 2013, they said they had finished releasing all of their UFO files. However, John Burroughs actually had been in contact with them about certain files he wanted to see. And they delayed him. They said, oh, it's going to be in our UFO dump. When it wasn't, he protested. He said, hey, I want to see these files. They ignored him, the UK government. And then finally, when a private citizen, seeing that John Burroughs had requested these files, requested them himself, they replied. And the MOD said, oops, sorry, I guess we do have some more UFO files. We'll get those out in about 9 months. That was now like 3 years ago. And so they keep delaying and delaying. One of the ministers in the House of Lords actually asked the MOD, when are you going to get these files out? And they're like, we're working on it. So they had given the March 2017 as when they were going to come out with these files. Yet another delayed date. But they didn't come out. So Andres Mueller asked them, hey, what's going on? When are you going to get these files out? And a spokesperson got back with him. And they told him that due to the upcoming election here in the UK and the rules relating to government departments during the pre-election period, the files will not be released until after the election. We are working to ensure that the files are ready for release as soon as this period as is possible, hopefully around the middle of June. So, the new date is the middle of June.
That is something. Wow.
Isn't it something?
I guess they can do that, I guess, huh?
Yeah, they could do whatever they want, you know, but it's just so strange that they've been delaying this for years and years now. You know, I think the last couple times I've had Nick Pope on the show, we've actually talked about this and why they're being delayed and what might be in there. He spoke at the Congress, not this year, but the year before, where he spoke about them. So we've been talking, you know, listeners have heard about these files, but hopefully we may see them sometime soon. And I know Nick Pope says they may have some interesting stuff in there. So we're all excited to see them.
Now, there's no real way to tell if they hold some of them back, is there?
No, like Nick says, and he has a great quote in one of the interviews where he says, you know, it's very easy to hide these files. They don't have to respond. They could say they don't exist. Or the easiest way is if they transfer them to a third party, like a private company. And private companies are not part of any Freedom of Information request. So, I mean, you can't officially get the files from a private company. So it's easy to hide files should you wish to.
Wow.
For their government and ours. So
Yeah. And I you hear a lot about files that are like plain missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know where they are.
Exactly. Like the NSA ones that are all darkened out, that. And this hasn't been a big story. I've been making a big deal about it. We gave an award to John Greenwald for his work on this. But I think this is a big deal. And it seems like I haven't seen anybody else make a big deal out of it except for me. But the NSA documents that Stanton's always showing that are all darkened out.
Yep.
Those, John Greenwald asked them to – oh, John Greenwald, of course, is making a big deal out of it because it is a big deal. John Greenwald asked them to provide the unredacted copies, so the copies that don't have the whited out, which they should, as time goes on, much of what was whited out should become unclassified. And
right.
So they should be able to show that. And they said, oops, we've lost all the originals. So they've lost all the original UFO files.
Bizarre, huh?
It is really bizarre. Really, really bizarre. One more story I want to talk about. Now, this one, unfortunately, I overlooked. I know I posted a link on this, but it's really cooler than just receiving a link. It needs its own attention. And I'm going to write a story on this, but I probably won't have time to get it up today. So I'll have it up tomorrow. If not later today. So sorry if you're listening to the show today. Probably many of you won't listen till later in the week. So on Tuesday, the 23rd, I'll have a story up at openminds.tv about this. But you probably saw this, Kurt Russell and the Phoenix Lights.
No, I did. I missed it.
Oh, this is cool. Okay, here's the story. So it's really cool. It's a video where...
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. You're right. When he was flying?
Well... I was just going to tell the stories.
Oh, I do know.
That was a spoiler.
I did read something a while back. Yeah, okay, sorry.
So on April 30th, Kurt Russell is in the new Guardians of the Galaxy, which I saw just the other day, and it's awesome. It's so good. I loved it. Kurt Russell is in it. So Kurt Russell and Chris Pratt are at some event on April 30th, and they're getting interviewed by a British gentleman. And the British guy, they're both sitting there, and the British guy says, opens this folder that says top secret on it. And he says, you guys might be interested in this. In Phoenix, during this famous UFO incident, there was a pilot who was flying into Phoenix, and he saw this UFO, and he reported it to the control tower when he was landing. And Chris Pratt is kind of like, what's this all about, you know, ho-hum. And Kurt Russell gets this big smile. And he starts kind of squirming in his chair, you know, I think more of excitement than nervousness. And he said, yes, I'm aware of this. The tail number on that plane was Cisco Bravo blah, blah, blah. And the pilot of that plane was me. And Chris Pratt's funny because he's like, what? And so he explains how Kurt Russell was coming to Phoenix to with his son to, I guess, pick up his son's girlfriend or something like this. And on approach, they saw these six bright lights, and it looked like perhaps a craft coming towards them. So I guess his son got a little nervous and said, Dad, do we need to worry about this? And he said, well, let me call the tower. So Kurt Russell called the tower and said, hey, I'm seeing these lights. You know, are there any objects in the way? And they said, no, we're not picking anything up on radar. And so they land. They pick up the girl or drop off his son, whichever it was, and he takes off and comes home. So no big deal. That was it. He said, I didn't even think about it. Even though it was shocking at the time, he's like, I didn't think about it again. My son didn't think about it again. We never talked about it again. Then he was he comes home and Goldie Hawn is watching TV and she's watching a UFO show and they start talking about the Phoenix Lights and how there was a pilot who had reported them and it triggered his memory and he's like, hey, I was flying into Phoenix at that time and I reported a UFO. He's like, I wonder if that was me. So he goes to his flight log and he looks up the date of that flight and sure enough, it was, you know, what, March 13th or whatever. So he saw the Phoenix Lights and then, you know, through the show and later he found out that, you know, tens of thousands of people had reported this UFO and stuff. So really cool story, kind of a new story for the Phoenix Lights. And it shows you how some of these old UFO stories still can have legs. You know, sometimes there'll be some new exciting discoveries. And I think this is a great addition to the Phoenix Lights story.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. I did read that briefly. I don't know if it was late at night or whatever, but yeah, that is really that's a great story.
Yeah, pretty cool. Did you see Guardians of the Galaxy?
Have not. Nope.
Did you see the first one?
Nope.
Oh wow.
It's a must see.
It is. It's. I love it. I'm a big sci-fi fan. I'm not as much a comic book fan. I like some of them, but it's really good. It's funny. The first I dare say that I like the new one, I think, a little better than the first one, and I really like the first one. So,
wow.
A lot of fun. I mean, they're fun. And that's what it's all about. So, a lot of fun. But Kurt Russell is really good in the new movie, and that interview is a lot of fun, especially to see Chris Pratt's reactions where he's just kind of freaking out. And Kurt Russell's, you know, like, you know, I saw this UFO along with thousands of others. So, pretty cool stuff, and yeah, I'll have that story up tomorrow.
Good stuff, man.
Anything else, my friend?
No, I saw on the website where someone has funded the Shag Harbor.
Yeah, so
that's the only other thing.
Yeah, some people might not know that they had a problem.
Yeah, that's true.
So I guess Canada, they were trying to get some grant. They were betting on getting a grant to do a Shag Harbor 50th anniversary event, you know, the Shag Harbor incident referred to as Canada's Roswell, and you could read more about it on our story at openminds.tv. But they were going to do a festival, and Shag Harbor is a real little town, 500 people, I guess. But they do have a little UFO museum there and a society around that. And they were betting on getting this grant, and they didn't get it. So their whole festival was in jeopardy. They, the news picked up on this story and interviewed them and some anonymous donor. I'm glad you brought this up because this is kind of interesting what the donor says. Some anonymous donor then gave them the money they needed and saved the event. So now they're going to do the event. The donor is a UFO researcher.
Nice.
Someone we probably know.
I thought they were all broke like us.
I know. Well, there's some. Wow. In fact, I know at least one Canadian man who has some substantial amount of money. He's a snowbird, too, so he comes to our Phoenix MUFON meetings. He's a possible person because he's got money. But this is what the donor didn't want to their name to be public, but did make a public statement. And this is what the donor says. Although there is much I can't reveal, without any hesitation, I can say the Canadian government and the international community it answers to appears to be concealing what happened in and around the waters of Shag Harbor, Canada on October 4th, 1967. People with the connections, notoriety, and finances are working hard to challenge how we view the world around us. Shag Harbor is one of the smoking guns that will be used to achieve this.
Wow.
Whoa.
Well, ironically, I have Don Ledger coming up on my show this week.
Really?
To talk about Shag Harbor.
Oh, yeah. Good. Good timing.
Nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you'll have to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. So it's nice to know there's a couple UFO researcher people out there with some money. Not many.
Yeah, and that will actually help something like that. You know, put their money down. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. So that's a good story. A good happy story.
Right.
All right. So I guess that is all. Thank you so much for joining us once again, Martin.
You are very welcome. I'm looking forward to next week.
Yay. It'll be a good one. So until then, let's go ahead and talk to Caroline. I am very excited to bring to the show Caroline Corey. Hello.
Hi, Alejandro. Thanks for having me today.
Well, I'm super excited to have you just because your film looks great. Now, I've seen trailers, but I haven't been able to watch it. However, I have a friend who has been able to watch it, and that's Lee Spiegel. And boy, did he love it. Man, he just keeps talking about how excited he is about this film and everything. And so cheers to you, and I hope and pray that you'll submit this to the UFO Congress Film Festival.
I definitely will. Yay. It was on my list. In fact, yeah, I put it on my calendar to do that in the fall, for sure.
Perfect. Yeah, I'll let you know when we get our stuff together and we have our applications ready, but very excited about that. So I guess to start off, let's get into it. The movie is called Gods Among Us, The Science of Contact. And in a nutshell, how would you describe what this film is about?
So Gods Among Us, The Science of Contact is a documentary about different individuals from around the world who have had some sort of contact with an extraterrestrial entity or an otherworldly intelligence, any sort of beyond the 3D dimensional contact. But the approach to these experiences is a scientific approach. What I wanted to do is bring credibility, if I could use that term, or bring some validation, because I have had these experiences myself my entire life. And so I feel that there's a lot of information that is not accurate or misunderstood or misinterpreted or certainly judged to be supernatural or not normal or what have you. So I wanted to bring not just a scientific validation, but more truth as much as I could. So that's what the film was about. And I think I succeeded.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, it seems like Leith feels that. You did. So in the experiences, I guess it sounds like then you're kind of I'm familiar with this, of course, with the interviewing people and everything. It's the idea of that people, including yourself, have these experiences, and some of what you're experiencing, theoretical scientists or others theorize that there's a possible mechanics to it. Like the rules of physics essentially don't say that this cannot happen.
Exactly. In fact, it's the rule of current physics, or mainstream physics. But the individuals that we have in our film, an astrophysicist from Harvard and other quantum physicists that not only say it is possible, but they are saying that it's very much real. And in fact, that's what we do in the film. One of the lead scientists in the film, Dr. Shield from the Harvard Smithsonian, now his specialty is black hole, the study of black hole, but also how it relates to consciousness, what consciousness is, if that is a measurable thing, if that is a real thing, a real phenomenon in terms of physics and mathematics, if you will. And he explains how the laws of the universe, the mechanics of the universe, can very easily explain such things as telepathy, for example, or even teleportation. Or, you know, when you say, you know, I saw a UFO, like, how did it get here? Did it get here? Was an illusion? So I ask him questions. If someone sees a UFO, is it possible that this UFO does actually exist? And if it does actually exist, well, how did it get here and how do we actually see it from a physics standpoint? And he explains it, you know, because we talk about the fabric of space itself and the magnetic properties of the black holes and the quantum waves and all of these things together explain and validate scientifically these phenomena.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like from the trailer, especially talking about Rudy Shield, he's talking about this idea of consciousness kind of being like other energies in the universe being spread, you know, like this thing that's just dispersed among the stars, like other sorts of maybe even gases and energies out there.
Yeah, precisely. So we talk about the fabric of space being not just a random kind of bunch of energies and forces, you know, just kind of thrown together. We talk about the fabric of space, the space itself or the vacuum being perfectly organized according to specific patterning and structuring that is holographic, that is geometric. And that means that the black holes are not, don't just happen to exist just anywhere. They exist where they exist for the purpose of being perfectly aligned and correlated with other black holes. So if you can imagine a hologram with all the black holes being geometrically perfectly aligned, then you create a sort of a perfect web system or a cosmic web system, so that whatever information that happens on at one black hole through resonance actually can and does exist at all the black holes at the same time, if you can visualize that. So that's kind of the way we, you know, he explained, and we talk about it in the film, and we actually show that. And I'm sorry to that you didn't get to see it, because we did actually send you a link. So I'm surprised that I'm sorry that you didn't get to view the film yourself. But of course we will do that again. But there is a visual of that structuring of space, the patterning of space around the planet. And when you see it visually, it makes perfect sense how it would be possible to be projecting your consciousness being connected to the fabric of space. Therefore, it's permeating the entire space around you. And so if your consciousness is projecting a thought, no matter where you are, let's say you're in Arizona and you're projecting your thought, that thought is kind of registered on the surface of the black hole. And because I'm in California, there are black holes right above where I am, then I am, through resonance, these two black holes pretty much have the same information, if you will. That's how I get the message instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
In a way, in a way, because it's also complicated, but, you know, and it comes back to quantum, and we'll get into that a sec. I do want to say I did get the link to the movie, and thank you very much. I didn't have a time to watch the film. However, I kind of like that, because then I'm fresh, just like the audience. So yes. That way I'm keeping them in the loop with what we're talking about. And I don't want to be sound too biased, but, yes. You know, if you're an entrant, because I get to do like the first wave of acceptance. But
you're right. That's a good idea.
So but getting back to what Rudy Schild is talking about, what you just described. Now, it sounds complicated, but what you're describing, and this is what is kind of cool and what excites scientists, especially in this field of this idea of consciousness. We don't know what it is or how it works necessarily, but the people who are best to speculate about it are the type of people you got in the film, like Dr. Rudy Schild, who's spent a lot of time thinking about this and matching it up to physics, which is, he's an astrophysicist. That's what he does. So that's what makes it interesting. And I mean, it makes sense in that science is often about discovering the order of chaos, what appears to be chaos. And,
right.
And right now, because we know so little about consciousness, it does seem kind of chaotic, but it makes sense that it would fit patterns. And if we could understand these patterns, then it can allow for some of the phenomena we observe but can't explain.
Absolutely. So it is not chaotic. It appears to be chaotic, but it is not. Can you imagine, you know, the intelligence of your human body? If things were chaotic, then your brain wouldn't know what to do. Your cells wouldn't know what to do. Every, you know, all your cells, all your organs would be bumping into each other. And, mm-hmm. I mean, there is an intelligent design. And if you can see that within your human body, within the DNA, for example, within nature, if you see that intelligent design, I mean, so then intelligent design doesn't stop to matter. It has to continue on. It wouldn't make sense to have intelligent design within matter itself, but then between matter and the stars, let's say, you know, the space itself, for that to be chaotic and not organized. You know what I mean? So it's almost logical that, you know, that fabric of space has the same intelligent design. So, so that's what we talk about. And this is very cutting edge, as like you were saying. It's, we are, physicists are just starting to, they're still thinking it's chaotic. And the concept we bring in the film is that there is this cosmic structure, and it is very much that structure, that patterning, that allows and explains very well the telepathy, but also teleportation, how a consciousness or a UFO, for example, could actually travel from far away in space to Earth instantly, because obviously the technology, we're not talking about propulsion here, we're talking about traveling along those pathways that are created through the black holes because of the patterning and the structuring of space. And and to go back to consciousness, what happens is that we notice that consciousness has this similar, or at least a patterning. The waves of consciousness are coherent mathematically, if you will, or geometrically with the geometry of space itself. So that if you put that wave with this other wave, it almost blends in, if you will. It's coherent. So that's the reason why consciousness is pretty much part of the fabric of space and can therefore exist anywhere throughout space. And so that's it's all about the geometry or the coherence of the different quantum waves. Mm-hmm. And we also talk about another brilliant scientist who's in the film is Glenn Rhine, and his work is on DNA. So he's been working with DNA, doing all sorts of experiments with that. And he also talks about geometry and shape of the DNA. And he noticed through his work that, you know how we talk about the DNA being two strands, and having these sort of waves and functions and conductivity and frequencies and things like that. Well, what he noticed is that when the frequency of the DNA is increased, the shape itself of the DNA changes from being two strand to becoming toroidal, meaning like a torus. So this is pretty amazing, because this means that even at a DNA level, on an atomic level within our bodies, our shape is also, the waves of everything within our body are also coherent with the space around us. So, you know, the implication of that also are pretty amazing, if you can imagine.
Right. And I want to talk about, like, you know, when you talk about Dr. Rhine, and I want to explain to the listeners, too, that, you know, when we talk about quantum, there's this frustration with a lot of people that this term quantum gets used and overused and often used by people who don't understand it, which is true. And they use it to explain or justify their speculation. But, you know, the people that you have in your film and that you're referring to, for instance, Dr. Glenn Rhine, his title is a quantum biologist and neuroscientist, and he works at a quantum biology research labs. You have Dr. George Weiss, who's a quantum physicist, and Dr. Beverly Rubick, who's a quantum biophysicist. And I know through there's an organization called SEC, the Society of Scientific Exploration, that was actually started to look at UFO stuff, but they've moved into the consciousness area because there's a lot there. And I think people are afraid to go there because it is so complicated. It sounds so weird. and I think, I don't know, maybe there's, and you can let me know if you've ran across this, maybe there's a fear where people almost don't want to understand the science of their consciousness, because it's kind of a scary aspect of thinking of maybe even your existence being somewhat robotic or mechanical, I guess, in a way, being explained. But that's what's exciting about your film, is that you're getting all these people together to have this educated discussion on these complicated topics. And it sounds like these theories or these things that you're talking about now, I mean, are they, these scientists in your film, do they all feel similar in that they are kind of coming to some understanding?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, it was very interesting. And just a quick note on what you just said about the fear factor. It's very interesting because as we were speaking to different people, from experiencers to scientists who wanted to participate, you know, especially the scientists, since we're talking about that, some of them had done amazing work themselves on, for example, mind-to-mind transfer or telepathic communication and things like that. But they felt that they weren't ready. They weren't ready to just be in a film, you know, and be talking about all this and the implication of it, or maybe be even associated with the term extraterrestrial. You know what I mean? So we encountered some of that, but fortunately, we also found those amazing scientists who were ready to do the work. We brought them in a film. And what's amazing is that it wasn't these guys. So, of course, they don't know each other, and they didn't know who else we were interviewing. So when, for example, I was talking to Dr. Ryan, interviewing him, and all of a sudden he's using words like the cosmic mind, the cosmic intelligence, the universal consciousness. And then I'm interviewing Dr. Shield out in Boston, you know, in Harvard, and he's using the same terms. And then I'm using interviewing Dr. Radin in California. And again, he's talking about the cosmic mind. So it's, yeah, you know, so that was fascinating that they are those scientists are beginning to use the same terminology and understanding the similar concept, even though they're not aware of each other or each other's work. So to me, that's very exciting. I feel that these scientists are ready to just kind of put it out there. But also what happened in the film, it wasn't just discussion and theory. I wanted to go a step further and actually do scientific experiments. I didn't want to just, you know, because, you know, in typical documentaries, you know, you interview experts and it's great, because I wanted to bring some sort of validation kind of beyond any doubt, if you will. And so we conducted actual experiments on camera, and the results were mind blowing. And I'm so glad I did that. And so I can share maybe one of the results, because we want to leave a little bit of suspense.
Right.
You know, that in one of the, excuse me, in one of the experiments that we did, it was actually in Dr. Ryan's laboratory. So the idea was to show that a non-physical entity, whatever it may be, an extraterrestrial that's showing up or through another dimension, or maybe an angel or something like, or a spirit, any sort of non-physical entity, if it would have any sort of physical impact on the body, on the human body. And so Of course, interestingly enough, Dr. Rhine has been working with human DNA. So we took a sample of a human placenta, and we did, of course, we ran several experiments because in science, as you know, you have to do it over and over and over. So we did that, and what I did was to specifically invoke an angelic being. I said, okay, so we're invoking that entity, and we want to see if there's, you know, any sort of contact that happens with that DNA. And one of the results that we found was the conductivity of the DNA shot up 400%, which is huge. This means that the electricity, the conductivity, which is the electrical conductivity that goes through the DNA, if it was going at one rate, what it increased to 400 times when that invocation was happening. And like I said, we did it over and over. So we know it wasn't a fluke. And so this is very exciting because these are only one of the results that we got, because the electrical conductivity of the DNA, when it's increased, increases also its ability to self-repair, to self-correct. So just with this one result, we pretty much showed that whether, you know, it's this angelic being or whatever, when that invocation happened and that contact happened, the DNA responded. Mm-hmm. And it responded in this manner. So, you know, I mean, this is pretty revolutionary right there. And then we had other sort of experiments as well done on the DNA, and the implications are just mind blowing. You know, so that sort of thing, I think, is making this film hopefully very, you know, bringing a lot more to it. Mm-hmm. And bringing that scientific validation.
Yeah. Well, see, I have, you know, my major was in psychology, but it was more industrial and stuff. But still, we studied the different things, you know, the mind. And then I also received a certificate in hypnotherapy. And what I find fascinating, and what, especially with what you're describing, is that, you know, there are, the way people heal, there's so much we don't understand, where some people will heal quickly and others won't. And hypnotherapy is one way where it's found that helps people, although the mechanics aren't really understood. But just like what you're talking about, your invocation seemed to have an effect. Now, that could be just because an effect coming from you somehow. Or maybe it could be a third party. Who knows? But it's demonstrating that there is an effect, like has been, you know, demonstrated before, at least not in this particular way, but in different ways. And that's what's fascinating, is that we might be able to at least understand the mechanics to that, which of course have huge benefits for people, because it shows that even things such as prayer or like what you did can possibly have an effect on someone's healing process.
Absolutely. It does have an effect. That's what we were validating. That's what we mm-hmm. were proving. But just to answer the question about maybe it came from me or from the angelic form. Well, we did another set of experiment to actually test that. Okay. So what happens when it's just me, and what happens when I say, okay, I'm calling in, I don't know, Archangel Michael or something, you know? So we did do these experiments, and it was different. But even, like, let's say, even if it was just me, because in either case, there was a difference. But in fact, that's even more exciting, because don't forget, I did not touch the DNA sample. The DNA sample was sitting on a table, you know, in front
right.
of me. So there was, you know what I mean? So I wasn't, whatever I did, if I did it, well, got injected somehow in the DNA. Does that make sense?
Right.
And this means, this is extremely exciting. This means that my thought, my intent, my invocation was able to affect that DNA. This then proves, like you just said, for in terms of prayers and things like that, this proves that when people are directing their invocation or their prayer on something, which would be their own body, it does work. That's what we were able to show very much on camera. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's very exciting.
Right. And I love the idea because it's just, there's obvious, I mean, there's just so much evidence out there. And I think people, especially, it's an experiential thing where some people go through a scary situation and some people very quickly make it out of it and some people don't. And, you know, healthy people, for instance, that get sick or have heart attacks or people who work out constantly sometimes don't make it through difficult medical issues, whereas other people who aren't healthy do. But there's attitude, there's all these different factors that we don't understand, and it's just wonderful that exploring these areas, because like you said and like these scientists have said, there are I know one of them I talked with, I don't know if you've met him, I can't remember his name right now, but I'll think of it. But anyways, talking about these subtle energies that we don't understand that are on the quantum level. And quantum just means extremely, extremely, extremely small. So small that, you know, that they're not things that we can easily detect like other things that are larger. And that's where these energies could exist, such as consciousness or even they theorize about, you know, then our brains having some sort of this material or being able to interact with all of this and our cells throughout our body, which could mean, and a lot of these scientists and biologists talk about it, you know, healing processes that we could, I mean, if we could, just by learning that prayer or helping people, just by thinking about them and thinking positively about them or trying to invoke something that can help them. That's a very easy thing. It's an inexpensive thing for us to do to help each other.
Absolutely. Exactly. That's why this work is just so exciting. Now, there has been other types of tests being done. You know, bringing healing energy and then, you know, seeing different sorts of results. But what we've done that's very unique was to measure it on a DNA sample. Mm-hmm. That's what's very different and unique because, wait a minute, we are pretty much changing the functioning of the DNA when we're changing its electrical conductivity. And then, like I said, we've done other tests where the frequency also changes. And what that means. So that's what makes it very unique in the sense that you are able to literally change your DNA. And by changing your DNA, you're changing your health, you're changing your entire being. So because of that, and you know, other tests as well that we've done. The scientists got so excited. So now we have an entire range of experiments that we are planning. In fact, we are planning the next show as well because I think this is going to be a series. Another quick thing that we did was a long distance also, now this time was not on DNA, but it was on biophoton measurement. And so the biophoton emission are tiny, tiny little particles of light, if you will, that are emitted from a human body. So we did an experiment where we projected again. We are trying to show that any sort of non-physical contact does change our body, does change our reality, and has a physical effect. So we did that as well. I was here in Los Angeles and the lab was in San Francisco, and we did the long distance projection of these beings, and same thing, the electrical systems, there's all sorts of devices that were measuring different sorts of changes, and the spikes were huge. And when you do it scientifically, we do it like on 20 minutes, off 20 minutes. So we know when the machine responds is when that invocation is happening. So this is very real. I mean, when we come in contact with an angelic form or an extraterrestrial or what have you, this contact did happen. And it did affect our physical cells, and that's what we're showing.
Mm-hmm. What I like about your experiment also is that with hypnotherapy, some people theorize that, you know, or the laying on of hands or something like that, that positive, just positivity you're sending to a person and them feeling that you care about them, and you're trying to help them, alone helps their state of mind, which helps them heal. Which is possible, and that's a good thing too. But with your experiment, you've shown that when, you know, this DNA is, you did your invocation on it, it's not a conscious thing that has a consciousness. So it's not like it felt positive and that's why it changed. It demonstrates like an outside effect from something outside of it.
Exactly. And that's what's scary and at the same time very, very exciting.
Yeah.
Because this means that, wait a minute, you know, when we come in contact with any sort of external energy, if that person, let's say, is bombarding us, or extraterrestrial or what have you, is bombarding us with negative energy, well, this does have an effect on us.
Mm-hmm.
It is a measurable effect. And that's why sometimes you just need to get out of a conversation or get out of a place, because it just doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Because literally it is happening. It is not your imagination. It is not only psychological. It is physiological. That's what we're proving. And so, but the exciting part is that if you're able to do it, if this is a spontaneous, let's say, an organic effect, well, then this means that your consciousness, your mind, your invocation has the same capability.
Mm-hmm.
And so all you have to do is then reverse it. And you now, you know, project on yourself. You invoke the energy, and that works just the same. You know, it's funny. Humans are programmed to only think of the negative, or always to go to a place of, you know, there's nothing I can do. I'm too small, you know, this entity is bigger than me. It knows more than me. It can take over me. It can control me. That is not true. Now, of course, some of the entities are extremely powerful, especially if they take you, you know, if you're off guard or something like that, catch you off guard or something like that. But, or if you're not prepared or you don't know what you're supposed to do, but it doesn't mean that you can't reverse. It doesn't mean that you can't invoke a protective energy around you, and so on and so forth. So this is very, very important for people to realize.
Yeah, you know, in all of my paranormal research and investigation, I've always gone in the back of my mind with that working theory, is that, you know, my own owning my own space and being positive and fearless is what's going to protect me. And luckily, I haven't had anything negative happen to me on all my ghost adventures or what have you. So maybe that's why. Maybe I've shielded myself.
You did. You have been.
So
yeah.
I want to apply this now to the extraterrestrial experience. And you yourself have had experiences. So maybe if you could describe what your experiences are like. Do you have a physical interaction, or do you feel that you have mostly messages or information?
Actually, it's a combination of both, but it started for me when I was very young. I was 5 years old, and that was the very first significant encounter, if you will. And that consciousness that came to me at that time was more of a, let's say, a ball of light. It looked like a condensed light. But as it showed up, and I could perceive the subtle energy right then, so I could feel it, sense it, but also see it and hear it. So what happens is that, you know, your brain doesn't function in the same way. It doesn't function in a linear sense. When you have these communication, your brain switches from like 10% functioning to a full brain, kind of absorbing the entire information at once. So when you come in contact with something, even something that you have never seen before, at the age of five, as you can imagine, there's no internet or any research to be done that tells you, you know, if you come in contact with such a thing, it means that. So, you know, obviously it's very spontaneous. It's, you're not prepared. And yet, when you do have that experience, your brain is capable, because we're talking now about consciousness. It's your consciousness that is tapping into their consciousness and vice versa. So I could see and perceive that this was a group of being. And in fact, I could see and perceive that they came from a place beyond this planet, beyond this galaxy. They came from a very faraway place in the universe. And we started communicating telepathically. I could see and perceive how the way they were communicating were concepts that were condensed into codes. And these codes were kind of being transferred, like I said, organically. It's like the two consciousnesses are merged, and whatever happens in one consciousness happens in the other. It's pretty much that. And so these codes were being transferred into my consciousness, and then the human brain translates them into a human language that you can understand. And so that's kind of how that was my first experience, and that kind of also set me up for the rest of my life to be able to perceive the different types of consciousness and discern them. So on and off, I've had those types of encounters. And eventually, as I grew up too, I started, you know, having physical visitations, but also, I mean, I've encountered beings in physical form as well, in a public space. So they've come to me in my environment, but also I've seen them outside. Now that's more rare, but the ones that came to me in my environment, some of them were from a star system that we call Sirius. These guys were actually had more of a shape. They weren't just a ball of light. They actually had the head and arms and legs, but they didn't have internal organs. They were just kind of light, but had a humanoid shape. And other types of beings as well that had a humanoid shape, but had less of a material, material form, if you will, and other beings as well. So it's kind of a range of different types of being throughout my life.
Let me ask you this, because this is one thing that is always a bit difficult, although I have my own thoughts on how it can be positive, though. When people, a lot of experiencers, people who experience a contact and communication or feel they do, their stories are, rarely do you find, it seems, two stories that are the same, meaning that it was the same type of entities telling the same sort of stories. Why do you think that might be?
Some of it is absolutely true. I mean, there are people who tell me stories who didn't know each other, but the detail, the type of information that they're saying, it's not that, okay, he was short, he was gray, he told me he's here to help humanity. Okay, this is just kind of very generalized, and it's possible that people are getting influenced or reading something and then projecting that into their own experience. But some of the things that they say is just too personal, it's too detailed that that, you know, that's when you start to go, huh, okay, that's, you know, how it's just too close for it to be an interpretation or a projection. So, but I've been working with people like this for a long time, and we talk about that in the film as well. But what happens is that I personally noticed that most of these experiencers, I want to say, and I'm generalizing here, I think about something about 60 to 70% of their story is real. It means that they did have an abduction or they did have a visitation, but then the rest of it is projected or interpreted, not necessarily on purpose that they are trying to sensationalize their story or make it more interesting, but because they think that's what happened. So, and there is a kind of a fine line between the authentic experience and where the human mind kicks in and interprets what's happening to them. Sometimes it's as you know, being a psychologist, sometimes it's a defense mechanism, you know, because you don't want to know. So if, you know, if you have an alien, you know, putting some tool inside your body or something, you know, and you don't, perhaps you want to block the idea that some DNA was taken from you or some eggs or what have you. And so you're interpreting that as perhaps they were trying to help and heal, you know, use my DNA to evolve humanity. You see what I mean? So,
No, I was going to say that's very interesting because that's how the mind works. I mean, even let's say you and I had met for a coffee a week ago and, you know, just a casual visit. And then a week later, we discussed that meeting we had and we say, you know, you remember this, you remember that. We're going to have different memories of that experience. We're going to have translated that experience differently. And that's just how the mind works. So that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. And it's according, the interpretation of that same story is going to be different according to our own individual filters. So you see what I mean? So that's where I think the human mind plays tricks. And again, this is not to say that the person is trying to be untruthful. It's just a defense mechanism out of fear and things like that. So in fact, what I do with them in the session is try to kind of help them see what really happened, the rest of the story. So the first 60%, yes, but then the rest of it, you know, actually this did happen, but to kind of help release it, if it is a negative experience, to shift it, to release it and transform it into a positive experience. And as I was just saying, you can do that with your thoughts. You can change, you transmute the actual consciousness, the actual memory, so that you can, you know, live with it or feel positive about it one way or another, or at least let it go. And so, and sometimes it's actually a very positive experience. There's no projection at all. So it's case by case. And that's the reason why we can't say, oh, they're all telling stories or half of it is true, half of it is not true. No, it's really case by case.
That's interesting. And it's one of the reasons why I, like, for instance, at the UFO Congress, we don't typically have experiencers come up and tell their story because the individual stories differ. And that's why I think it's great to have researchers come up because they can talk about the commonalities so that I think we get a more full picture. Like what you're describing, we could get more a better picture of then what may or may not be happening.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's okay for experiencers to tell their stories, you know, but again, as long as they begin to admit that, I think this is a kind of a way to also perhaps educate the experiencers themselves and say, you know what I mean? And say, this is what I understand happened. This is what I know for sure happened because I came back with this scar that I didn't have before, for example, you know what I mean? Things that are absolutely real. But at one point, if you are able to say, you know, at this point, I think I heard this and I think I understand it that way, I think it's better than to say, this is the way it is and this is what exactly happened. Because as you well know, even in healing, I mean, I've been doing this work for a very long time, like almost 20 years, helping different people, not just with extraterrestrial contact, with all sorts of subconscious blocks. And, you know, people think it's one way when it's not. And so, and it's very hard to work on yourself, because you can't see your own stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the reason why. So a lot of some of my very advanced students, they do amazing work with other people, but then when it's their own stuff, yeah, you know, it's very hard. So that's the reason why I think everyone should at least admit that and say, you know, at this point, I think it's this way and I believe this is what happens.
Yeah, yeah. I think it goes back all the way to Carl Jung, kind of that dark self that we're blinded to, that we all have this dark side, and that for some reason we just can't see it all. We can't understand it all, which we sometimes need outside help to someone to tell us that, of course, we don't want to see all the bad stuff about ourselves. But it's important, because we can't work through that stuff without being aware of it. So it's like you said, part of these filters that we have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, really interesting. I guess before we're out of time, another thing I wanted to talk about and ask you about, some of my listeners are probably familiar with Dr. Gary Nolan, because at least a while back, I interviewed him a couple of times and we talked a bit about him. He is a professor of microbiology at Stanford University. And he did DNA analysis on a couple different skeletons or remains that people felt might be extraterrestrial, but his analysis showed otherwise. However, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because what's cool about him is that he was willing to do this in the first place. Like you said, a lot of scientists don't want to be attached to ET stuff, and especially at Stanford. And I know he is sensitive about it, because when I wrote, you know, he was very careful, and the nuance of what he said was really important. He had to be very careful that way. But what's cool is that he was willing to take the risk to be involved with this sort of stuff. And I guess, what role does he play in the film?
Well, actually, Gary was awesome, because he represented, like, you know, kind of the scholar, you know, from an established institution such as, you know, Stanford University. Wow, you know. So it was great to have him on board. He didn't get involved in any of the experiments or anything like that. He was more talking to us about all the research being done on DNA and where things are with the DNA, because, you know, there's still this whole confusion about the junk DNA and what how much we know of the DNA and things like that. So these were strict interviews with him, but he is so knowledgeable. I mean, he brings up actually pretty amazing, points about the DNA that in the film end up helping make our case, if you will. So that's why his insight and input was extremely valuable. And he's very eloquent. His work is so detailed. So he can talk about the DNA from that perspective, you know, and kind of to tell us where science is with it at this point. But like I said, he does go there, and he does include the cosmic intelligence or some sort of, I don't think he uses the word extraterrestrial, but he, in the film, I'm sure he doesn't, but he does talk about some sort of intelligence behind the DNA. So we were very grateful to have him. He was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the term of cosmic intelligence, or I think there was a precognitive intelligence or something like that. You know, another person, Dr. John Alexander, refers to these outside kind of consciousness that may or may not or are influencing somehow, these kind of self-aware intelligence that seems to be elusive but out there somewhere. And I love that because it's at least it's acknowledging this sort of intelligence that seems to be apparent, but without necessarily defining it too thoroughly. Because I think, like you said, we have to be careful sometimes of being too sure of ourselves when we're not quite sure, when we quite don't necessarily know.
Yeah, I think he was referring to the intelligent design, and but at the same time, throughout his explanation, and as he was saying where we are with the research on DNA and things like that, he was still very open. Like he didn't want to. That's what I loved about him, is that even though he's part of the traditional system, you know, part of the university system and things like that. So even with what he was saying, it's almost like at the end of every sentence he was saying, but we should still keep the door open. It's possible that it could be this. It's possible, which is quite unusual, I would say, for a typical professor from a university like that.
Right.
So, and yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah, what's cool is that's truly scientific, is that, you know, we can't he's doing the same thing. He's being careful not to make assumptions, where so many scientists seem to do that, which I think limits them, because often in science, especially we see this in the space science all the time, the answers turn out to be something completely different than they could have ever speculated.
Absolutely. In fact, they keep fighting about it, remember? The universe is expanding. No, it's retracting, or it's
I mean,
we're collapsing, or no, we're not collapsing, and there's chaos, but there's no chaos. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like...
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I did remember that scientist's name, Dr. Claude Swanson.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, he's great. He's done a couple talks for us, but he does a lot of lecturing in all of the Chinese and Russian experiments that are similar to what you're talking about. And he's similar to Dr. Rudy Shield, where they're trying to figure out what these underlying, you know, energies are that would allow for all of this stuff we've been talking about.
Yeah, I did talk to Dr. Swanson, in fact, in the beginning, I wanted him to also be involved in this, and then didn't work out somehow. Mm-hmm. But that's what I was saying earlier. There have been a lot of experiments on that, how the healing energy does change the fabric of physical reality in one way or another. And he's one of those amazing scientists who did that work. But like I said, so what the new element in the film is that DNA sample experiments that's really fascinating. So, and we're hoping to continue. That's the idea. So it's very, very exciting.
So I guess my last question before we leave is going to be about, I know we've kind of gone over in time, but time has flown by too quickly. The title, Gods Among Us. I guess, what are your thoughts about that title?
Well, actually, it's funny you ask that. I wrote a book called Gods Among Us, and it was more about the universal consciousness that each being is consciousness. And then that enters into a what happens to be a human body today, but it could have been in another body somewhere else, on some other planet, some other galaxy. And how, because it is all originally universal consciousness, then it has that God element, but of course not in a religious sense at all. So because I have that book, I kind of wanted to build on that. And of course, with gods with an S makes it more of a general term. And then I added the science of contact, because it is about science. Having said that, interestingly enough, the distributors are having a bit of a hard time with that title, because they don't want it to sound religious, which of course, with the word science, obviously it's not religious. But, you know, it's one of those things from a marketing or what have you. So in certain markets, or maybe foreign markets or what have you, you, this may have a different title. So that's what we're discussing right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that definition you just gave. I could see their issue, but it reminds me of the term namaste, which I love, which is an acknowledgement of that consciousness or divinity in everyone. And I just love exactly. that thought. So
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much. Where can people go to get more information about the film?
The best thing to do is just go to the website, mm-hmm. godsamongus.com, and they can see the updates. They can go to the events page and see where it's showing, all the conferences that we have coming up. But the next probably one is going to be in New York, May 28th. At a film festival, and we're going to keep posting all these screenings on the website. So, and also they'll be able to watch it and order it from that website as well. So godsamongus.com is the place to go.
Great, and hopefully they'll be able to watch it and maybe potentially meet you at the UFO Congress in February.
Absolutely. I'm going to be in touch in the fall, right?
Awesome, yes.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun. You're awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun for me, too.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much to Caroline for being on the show. Really interesting stuff. I'm excited to see her documentary. It sounds great. Like I said, Lee Spiegel loves it. And you know, Lee is like me. He's very careful. Credibility is a very important thing to him. I think a lot of us are that way, and that's what's great. You know, a lot of you all, and I myself roll my eye when people invoke the quantum magical, mystical, you know, quantum is the answer for this and quantum's the answer for that. When people don't really understand what the heck quantum is and what it means, but certainly scientists like the type that she got in her film are the type of people who are qualified to speculate about quantum physics and the subtle energies, like they call them, that may be at play when it comes to some of these mysterious things. I mean, if ghosts are real, if telepathy is real, if some of these things are real, there are some mechanics that are working behind the scenes, and that's what these people are trying to do. I mean, a phenomena such as the ones I just mentioned, those are less observed, and you know, they're more debated. However, consciousness is a phenomena that we're aware of and we deal with every day. We know there is such thing as consciousness, but where does it come from? How does it work? We don't understand that. And it's possible that the mechanics behind all of this are related to some of those other phenomena that people observe, but are so less common and considered supernatural that people question their existence at all. Some of you are probably open just like me to the ideas. I mean, I've certainly had experiences that feel like they're psychic phenomena. Whether or not they were, who knows? There's something I can't prove. They could be coincidence. I don't know. Otherwise, I haven't seen a ghost or experienced some of these other phenomena that others have. But there are credible people reporting some incredible things. And if these things are happening, there's something going on there. And it's exciting to think that, you know, there are bright minds, some smart thinkers at some of the most important institutions out there thinking about this stuff and working on these answers. And so Caroline's film being brave enough to kind of delve into all of this, it's really exciting. It's great to have resources like that. So I'm very excited about the film. You can go to, godsamongus.com to read more about her film, godsamongus.com. So you'll see more there. Otherwise, I want to remind you all. So we have, speaking of abduction, the video from Yvonne Smith is up on our video on demand, her lecture from the 2017 UFO Congress. We also have Richard Dolan up there. And speaking of Phoenix Lights, earlier in the show, we have the Phoenix Lights presentation from James Fox. What a cool guy James Fox is. So really good stuff. So please go to the video on demand and subscribe, and we'll have some more videos up shortly. So lots of 2017 videos. But we've got over 100 videos now of some really, really good lectures, including that one from Dr. Claude Swanson I was talking about these topics that we talked about here. So if you love these topics, you'll definitely want to go watch this lecture from Dr. Claude Swanson that you can find at the Open Minds video portal. Of course, just go to openminds.tv to see that. You'll also find the stories we were talking about. So the Shag Harbor story, the story about the British MOD files. And if it's Tuesday when you're listening to this, you know, we'll have up, or if you're listening today, you know, later, we'll have up tomorrow. So Tuesday the 23rd, we'll have up the story about Kurt Russell seeing the Phoenix Lights. How cool is that? So really cool stuff at openminds.tv. And we also, on the, I want you to tell people the UFO Congress website. If you go to UFOCongress.com, you'll see the dates. What is it? February 14th to the 18th for the next conference. Everything else on the website is TBD, so you're not going to see much else. However, in the next month, June is really when we kickstart things. We'll start to list speakers, and we'll open up registration and all of that good stuff. So it will begin in June. So next month, we'll start to get some more information up at UFOCongress.com. I know it's going to be another very exciting event, and Martin, Crazy Martin, our news guy, will be there. So speaking of Martin, I want to say thank you to Martin for joining us with the news at the beginning of the show. Also, thank you to Caleb Hanks for the wonderful open and close music. You could go to the UFO radio page at openminds.tv to read and get a link to get more of Caleb's work there. He does some really cool stuff. And finally, I want to thank you, all the listeners, for being here once again. Thank you so much. We'll have another great show next week. Until then, adios, muchachos.